A Thought for Your Penny is hosted by Shauna and Squeaky and explores ways to save money and tips to avoid scams, all while they share their own stories along the way. Get in touch by calling 970-425-3060 or emailing penniespod@gmail.com.
Hey, welcome to A Thought for Your Pennies, where we talk about ways that we can save money together. This is a quick trigger warning for this episode, as it does discuss birth, which is a very graphic process. And it also discusses pregnancy, which is a very physical process. So if you are eating lunch, if you haven't eaten lunch, if you are a little bit queasy when it comes to these kinds of things, skip the next 8 minutes and 30 seconds and hop on over to the next segment about how you can save money with your family when you're expecting. And thanks so much for listening to A Thought for Your Pennies. Okay, so A Thought for Your Pennies, and I'm going to tell you some stories about being a birthing person to help you commiserate if you are on or near or around birth. I mean, it's a miracle of life, and it is really painfully annoying at times. So when I was first pregnant with my daughter, I was sick all the time. Like, I went to a restaurant, and I was like, I need a plastic bag, and they were like, we only have paper bags, and I was like, that is not going to work out very well. And they found out immediately why that bag was not going to work. Yeah, just smells, different temperatures, anything, everything made me sick all the time for the first 6 months. And we were babysitting a dog, a basset hound, and it was a puppy. And it's the middle of the night. I am 6 months pregnant and the dog is whining because it needs to go out. So I go down to the landing where this basset hound is next to the patio door wanting to be let out. And I am trying to bend over to take the leash to put it onto the dog's collar. And the dog...
You're just in prime barf position, bending over. Okay.
Exactly. So, you know,
okay.
I just let it go. And I heave-ho, you know, right next to the dog. And I look up a little bit to give myself a break. And then I hear a lapping noise.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because the dog is like, oh, appetizers. Why, thank you.
Appetizers. I'm going to go outside and eat the main course after I make it.
Oh, so disgusting. So disgusting. And so I am easily triggered by disgusting things like a dog eating what I just yucked up. So I immediately start vomiting again. And this time I just go straight on the back of the head of the dog because... I mean, just instant, right? I hear the lapping. I look down, confirm, yes, this is nasty. And then my body, blah, right onto the back of the neck of the dog. And then the dog is like, my God, you are so gross. Are you barfing on me? I don't think so. And then the dog is like, oh, I'm disgusted. And the dog starts barfing up what it just ate, which is what I just
had eaten once.
Vomited. So it was like a barf waterfall of me barfing on a dog that was barfing up my barf. And it was just like this slime of green and yellow spreading everywhere. And I made the baby daddy clean it up because I couldn't handle it anymore. And that was really disgusting. Probably the worst barfing. You know, when you're barfing, the dog's barfing up your barf, like that is the... I haven't heard a barfier story than that one yet, but let me know. Or maybe don't let me know. Maybe say, hey, have you had lunch? Okay, you can read this. But and people have asked us like, oh, what happened to that dog? It was my friend's dog. She took the dog back and haven't heard.
Well, you don't return a dog because it's got barf. I mean, you know, it's a dog.
And we were watching it for a friend and we gave it back. And, you know, I assume it's fine. Maybe its palate has changed and what it eats, but who knows? Dogs.
Doesn't have opportunities every day to eat that.
Yeah, that is, yeah. But it's not our dog. We are babysitting it. So the other pregnant story I wanted to share about was the time that I was not pregnant, but for a while, like 15 years, maybe 20 years after the last one. I don't know how many years. I looked pregnant because I carried a lot of my weight in the middle. And everybody knows it's an extreme social faux pas to assume that somebody else is pregnant, right?
Because, yeah, it doesn't stop some people, though.
Right, because occasionally there's just people who are fat, and I used to be looking like that until I got into running. And so it's like, we know that that part is bad, but what people don't think about is that when you're the person who's being offended, there's nothing you can do. Like, there was no time I could say, oh no, I'm not pregnant, but thank you for thinking of me as reproductive. Like, there was just no way to get out of it. You can't correct someone and say, oh, don't worry about it. I get it all
the time.
They're
going to feel bad. They're going to feel bad.
Right. You can't just be like, I'm fat and healthy. Thank you. You know, they'll say things. Oh, I'm so sorry. You must have just given birth. And most of the time for me, it was like, yeah, 10 years ago, but I couldn't really say that or,
just,
you know,
anything to give them a little bit of face to save. Right. Just
nothing.
Anything. Right.
But there was nothing. I couldn't be like, oh, I didn't know I was pregnant, but I'll check because you seem to think so. Like, there was no saving it for either one of us.
You should just have a pregnancy test and a keychain and be like, not as of, and then make something up. Be like, not as of this morning. I just checked.
Yeah, right? Like, and so since there was no graceful way to get out of this, it was always like, I'm the one who was being offensive for just looking pregnant. Like, but there's no way to, so I did actually find a way to get out of this, though.
Okay, okay.
Which was to just go with it. Like, if somebody said, oh, are you pregnant? I'd be like, yes. And they would be like, I can tell you're 5 months along. And I would say, no, actually, I'm going to give birth tomorrow. And they'd be like, oh,
goodness,
my God.
Oh,
you're barely
in great shape for that. Yeah.
It must be a girl. And I'd be like, oh, but actually, I'm pregnant with twins, a boy and a girl. And isn't that rare? I'm due any moment.
You should ask people if they want to feel the baby and they're just feeling the Chipotle burrito from earlier.
Yeah,
right?
I should have done that. Yeah, I did.
So good.
I didn't get it that far into it. I was just like, yes, you know, and they'd be like, oh, I can tell you have that pregnancy glow.
Sure, sure.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, giving people tips. If there's somebody in your circle that you know that is going to be giving birth, it's if you're going to witness a birth or if you know somebody who's going to witness a birth, this is the tip for that person, which is that stand next to the person giving birth at the head of the bed.
You don't want like a deep down the canal shot.
No.
You don't want
that. If you're up here by the head, this is where the miracle of life happens. That's the amazing viewpoint where after, for me, like where after I felt somebody else's skull going through my body, you get to take a peek at them from behind a sheet. Because if you're standing at the tail end of it, it's going to take you a long time to recover from what, you know, like you said, down the canal. If you're standing up here at the head of it for the head of the birth, then it's like the opening for the Lion King, right? Where it's like Elton John singing the circle of life.
Yeah.
And the whole grasslands are gathered around and the antelopes are on their hind legs and every, you know, giraffes are doing whatever they do and they're singing. It's, you know, it's the Disney Channel, right? That's here. But if you are down here at the tail end, you're on National Geographic. You're watching the documentary with the scary orchestral music where the lions have the gazelle and they're tearing it open. And that's the wrong part of the circle of life. It will make you question if people who give life really just know how brutal it is down there. Because, I mean, for me, I didn't really know because I was up here.
Maybe for most people, observe the miracle of life from the same point of view as the, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's reasonable. The tip I have. If you are going to witness a birth, down here is the splash zone. That's what my mother called it. But up here, beautiful, beautiful way to watch your grandchildren be brought into the world. Unless you're the doctor. Then the doctor, you know, you got to be down there.
Okay.
Hey there, Penny Thinkers. This is the ad part of our show that you want to skip over, but I don't want you to skip it because I want you to help out people who have survived the LA fires. And we have this link for you, linkcuts.org/LA fires. If you go there, there's a Google spreadsheet that has a ton of different organizations to help out the victims of the LA fire. Would love if you could show your support for our show by supporting the survivors.
I don't know what you said, Shauna, but I wholeheartedly agree that we should help people in the LA fires. So yeah, was that linkcuts.org/LA fires, all lowercase?
Yeah, that is the link, linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Well, I support you think I am. Fires prevent, money donate.
Did I just word salad?
If you didn't, I got lost.
Man, the important thing is linkcuts.org/LA fires. All right, welcome back, everybody, to A Thought for Your Pennies. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Squeaky. We're going to be discussing saving money with raising a family, right?
When starting a family, my friend Tristan is having twins. So this episode is for her, what you can do to save money when you're starting a family.
Well, I'm a boring old white man with no familial prospects, so I'm the perfect person to offer advice.
Yeah. Well, I went to her baby shower, and I learned the reason why every person's fingerprints are different, even twins. Do you know why that is?
I have some wild guesses. But no, I don't know.
It's because your fingerprints develop by touching the sides of your amniotic sac. And so that's how your fingerprints develop. And that's why everybody's is different, even if you're having identical twins.
How did they test that?
I don't know.
That feels like one of those nature facts that you learn in like second grade. You never challenge. Like that very well could be true. But like, I don't know.
Well, it's my source is Tristan's baby shower, so I think we can trust anything that was said there.
Canonical.
Scientific fact.
Right, got it. Right. Perfect.
So, Tristan, good luck, and here's some advice for you as you are having a family, what you can do to save money. And, you know, the thing is while we're talking about how families can save money, honestly, this can apply to any of us when we're going to be saving money. But I think it's just so clear that you are spending a lot of money when you're raising kids, especially if you're having twins, because you need twice of everything. But the first tip that we have is meal planning. When you're raising a family, you got to get a handle on your food and your food budget, because that is something that will explode pretty quick.
So, like, meal planning, like, I should punch into Google Maps where McDonald's is?
No, Squeaky. Although I guess if you do want to eat out all the time, I mean, I had a friend who with her kids was like, on Tuesday nights, my kids eat free at Applebee's. On Wednesday nights, they eat free at Golden Corral. On Thursday nights, they eat free at what an insert restaurant here. Like she had mapped out all of the places that her kids could eat for free while going out to eat during the week.
Why can her kids eat for free there? What is this about?
Yeah, some restaurants have, if your kids are 12 and under or 10 and under, they can eat free.
I've got some short friends. I'm going to shave them. We're going to make this work.
Okay.
Well, this is perfect.
All right. Let us know how much money you're able to save by passing off your tiny friends as children, Squeaky.
Okay, I'll let you know.
Yeah, but most of the time what we would say is, you know, meal planning and eating at home is probably the cheapest way to be able to afford to feed your family. And by shopping for things that are on sale, there are apps out there now that will aggregate sales flyers based on your zip code that can help you find the best deals to be able to have your family meal planning. So that's one of the ways to minimize your expenses. And what I do for my family is I always cook a little more with whatever dinner I'm cooking that night. And then I make sure the leftovers are used for lunches the next day and that we have a leftovers night one night of the week that reduces food waste. And it also makes it a little easier on me when I'm just like, hey, family, it's leftovers night. Go ahead and make it. Actually, I don't do the majority of cooking. My husband does. I know it made it seem like I do, but reduces the load on him by having a leftovers night where we just all fend for ourselves. And it actually gets to be quite fun because you are like, I know these really good leftovers, so I gotta run and get my stuff first before the other people get into the really good leftovers and I get the, ah, no, that wasn't very good leftovers.
Me and the roomies have fallen into a routine. We take turns cooking different nights and we're each responsible for planning one night. And I know after my buddy Mako does tacos, there's always the leftover grounds in the fridge. And throwing together quesadillas with leftovers, it takes like 2 minutes to microwave some cheese in a tortilla. And we're like all not eating meat, but so they're beefless grounds, which is
nice.
So many jokes to write there. But groundless beef, whatever.
Keep reaching, but Squeaky.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit of the grounds. So I presume it would work with real meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit of cheese, throw a little bit of some sort of taco seasoning on there, and like 3 seconds later, you have a delicious thing that's microwaved up. You microwave that for just a second, and I imagine every kind of leftover has options, right? You just have to...
Right. Yeah, I find that one of the best leftovers that I can do is by taking whatever leftovers there are and throwing it together in a quiche the next day. Leftover spaghetti, the grounds you were talking about, that would be perfect in a quiche. Something that didn't get used up totally. It can't be used in lunches, but is great for breakfast. And then quiche reheats pretty well too. So that's kind of my go-to leftovers recipe. Quiche. I also have just learned how to cook bibimbap, which is
what
like...
What is that?
It's a Korean dish, and I'm probably saying it very incorrectly, so apologies to all my Korean friends, but it's when you take rice and you flatten it, and I flatten it in the bottom of a cast iron, and you cook all other kinds of things in it, like sweet potatoes and chickpeas and just all these other kinds of things, but then like your crust layer becomes the rice layer. And then I serve it with some kimchi and avocados, and it's pretty darn good.
So instead of like a stir fry, like you're mixing the rice in with stuff, you're like crusting the rice to the bottom of this cast iron skillet.
Yeah, I think twice that fried rice is delicious, delicious. I love that kind of leftover, so yeah.
Half the time when I cook, I'm doing a teriyaki soy curls, but there's a bed of white rice, and we, you know, I fry up these soy curls. It's kind of like little pieces of chicken, kind of, and some teriyaki sauce, and that's delicious. But I always make extra rice because one of my other roommates will take the rice and then fry it and then do something else with it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Rice is totally reusable. You just have to, not expect it to be the same form. You get different forms of rice. It transforms, right? And if you do it right, you can decide which kind of transformer your rice is. So if you're a bad cook, it'll be a Decepticon.
Okay. Yeah, and one thing I tried to do to save on money, but it didn't turn out, was to grow my own food. But then I realized, you know, like kale and tomatoes and Brussels sprouts, and just to, you know, be able to supplement the diet with fresh things when it was in season. But it turns out the stuff that you can grow at home is also pretty much the cheapest stuff at the grocery store.
There's no way your flower box at home is competing with the million acre massive farm. Yeah.
So I still do it because I think it tastes better, and I especially do it with herbs. Herbs, I think, can get pretty expensive, fresh ones. So growing that at home has been a good return on investment, but everything else I've kind of like, it's not a big deal. And I at one point was really looking into homesteading and was trying to figure out, like, if I was to grow everything my family needed at home, how much would I have to grow? And one of the books I read was like, each person needs 75 pounds of potatoes per year. And so I would have to grow that much potatoes.
That's
not
four
people. 75 pounds?
Yeah, that's like one drive-through trip.
How many pounds does the average potato plant deliver, Squeaky?
Well,
do you think?
You can get those little baby potatoes that you microwave 15 seconds and they're done. Or you can get those big, huge, giant Idaho pound and a half potatoes that like, you know, they'll serve you at a steakhouse because you're the weirdo dude who goes to a steakhouse and doesn't eat meat. I don't know. They still treat you well. You know, they'll make you fat either way.
Yeah. Well, I just didn't want to be having to take care of 40 to 50 potato plants. And that was just like the staple start to doing family homesteading, to be able to preserve and do. There's some people who really, really get into it. You can save a lot of money that way if that's like all you eat. But again, lots of time.
And yeah, we're at that time money trade-off, that gradient again. Like, how much is it worth it to you? Like, for most people, it's totally not worth it, but there's going to be that weirdo farmer who loves it. Can I go back to spices for a second?
Yeah.
Over here, we swing by Natural Grocers and we pick up like the big bulk bags of spices. And it turns out that like a gallon bag of basil is like $15. And that'll refill our little basil jar like 15, 20, 30 times. I don't know. It's so many times it's not worth counting. And the little McCormick spices in the store are like $3 or $4. So it's like obviously like a huge saving, but it's not going to be as good as the fresh stuff.
Right. And my Rex is in a phase of his life where he is eating me out of house and home. So meal planning for him right now is like, please, buddy, can you down some more pasta? Can you down some more rice? Because we had like a bag of shrimp and he cooked that for himself and ate an entire family bag size of shrimp, which is not as cheap as a family.
Yeah, shrimp
bag
are crazy
of rice.
Expensive. It's like one of the premium meats, right? Like, well, let me guess. It was like a 12-ounce bag. It was probably like $15, $20 or something like that.
No, it was a Costco-sized
shrimp
bag. Oh,
Costco throws all the math out.
And he was like, I want to have a lunch of complete shrimp. So he did. He treated himself.
No, how big is a Costco bag of shrimp?
I can't remember. I just know that it took up like half a shelf in the freezer. I don't know if it was like 60 ounces or something. It was a family-sized bag of shrimp that was not meant for one person.
We get the Costco bags of shredded Mexican cheese that go in the quesadillas and whatever else we cook. And it is, I think, 2 32-ounce bags is obnoxiously large. And I'm just, oh my God, that filled with shrimp?
Right. And he didn't, like, have rice or bread or anything else. He just had shrimp. So, you know, introducing your children to meal planning as early as possible. Don't make the same mistake I did to be able to save your budget. But moving on, another thing you can do, Tristan, when you want to save for your family is making sure that when you get stuff, you get it used. Kids burn through a lot of stuff. They grow fast.
How do you get used shrimp? Used food, Seascat.
You can get the used shells that he left.
No.
The giant pile of shrimp shells.
You're not supposed to have a good answer for that.
Yeah, that's why food is its own category, right? Because there's a lot of strategies to save on food, but then other stuff that's a little bit more durable, shoes, pants, shirts, coats, some stuff here in Colorado, with how fast kids grow, they need a winter coat for one season, and then that's it. They're too big now for them to use the same coat or the same snow pants the next season. So in Colorado, actually, there's a lot of swaps that families do, especially like ski swaps, to be able to come in and bring all this stuff. If you haven't already given it to siblings and it's gone through and it's like done, it's at the end of life, getting that stuff used. Toys is another really good durable one that you can get used.
Do you have those kid-centric thrift stores? Like out here, we have Big Wheels to Butterflies, so you can like bring a thing in, you know, get a couple bucks for it and turn that into the next thing your kid needs.
Yep. So there's those thrift stores, there's consignment shops, yard sales, online marketplaces. This can save you a lot of money. And another thing I do when it comes to kid stuff is an app called Freebie Alerts that tells me anytime anything in my, like I tell it within a 10-mile radius, tell me what to get posted on Facebook or Nextdoor for free.
Neat.
And I make sure I post stuff there for people to take for free. Like I make sure that I am participating in it, but that's a really great place to get stuff for your kids. You know, you want them to try out soccer. You want them get them to try out different sports, different activities to be able to get the sports equipment for free. There's some stuff that you don't want to get used, like car seats.
Gear?
Yeah. Safety stuff, car seats, because you don't know if it's been in a crash or not. So there are some things you do need new and some consumable things. Things like school supplies, like pencils and notebooks.
You
that's kind of hard to
pencils.
Get used. Yeah, right. Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff you can get used. And so you should do that first so you can save your money to get stuff that you can't get used. There is a competition with free stuff. Like I remember there was somebody who was posting a free pressure washer and a free vacuum. And I wanted the pressure washer. And it was just like on a curb. And I showed up the same time as somebody else who I thought was there for the vacuum or the pressure washer. And so I was like, oh, you know, there's two of us and there's two things. I wanted the pressure washer. Did you want the vacuum? And he's like, I'm here for both. And he took them both and put them in the back of his van and drove away while I just stood there. So you do have to watch the alerts and get there first. And on the freebie alerts, if you're looking for something in particular, like Tristan, you're expecting kids and you want to get your twins like Big Wheels, you can put in the freebie alerts, like alert me anytime somebody posts Big Wheels, and then your phone will notify you and say, hey, this person posted a Big Wheel.
Neighbor kids, they drive around crazy stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever.
Really cool.
Whatever the kids have nowadays thoroughly makes them a hazard on the road. So there's something like that, right?
Yeah.
And the condition my car's in, I think if they hit me, my car's going to break. And this tiny, like, half-size H3 is like, you know, it's this weird micro Hummer, right? It'll be fine. My car will be wrecked.
Yeah. So another thing that you should think about when you're having a family is that it's going to be more expensive to do fun things together as a family. Whereas right now it's just you or it's just you and your partner. And then as you have kids, you have to pay for entrance fees for everybody. You have to pay for food for everybody when you go out. Movies cost more. Theme parks cost more. Diversion activities simply cost more. So saving money on this, you can opt for free or low cost entertainment options. Camping is pretty cheap. Going on bike rides, if you can find bikes used, visiting museums on no admission days, going to your library and checking out passes to these kinds of things, to state parks. This can be really fun for kids.
It seems like there was a pattern there, right? Anything you get that has reusable stuff is going to be cheaper. Even if you do buy, like, a nice new bicycle for you and all the kids, right? If you use them a bunch, you're still going to wind up you know, getting more fun bang for your buck, right?
Right. I think if you aim your purchases for things that can give you experiences over stuff, that has been shown to make you happy. Because I think for me, what I've learned about parenting is that kids do not really need a lot of lavish stuff. They don't need all the other things that you might feel peer pressure to get them to get, or they're feeling peer pressure to get. What they need the most in their lives is quality time with you.
Got it.
So opt for the things that increase the amount of FaceTime that you have with your kids rather than bragging time with their friends.
All right. So I have this shopping list for kids. I'm just scratching off Louis Vuitton completely.
Yeah, they don't need it.
No.
They really don't.
Okay. We don't need the little three-piece Armani suits for the 4-year-old Tyke, no?
No.
And I guess going with the previous advice more seriously, this sounds like a thing where if you're going to do something that involves equipment, there's probably ways to get that cheap or free or rent it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet places might rent you or lend you a bike to see if the kids are into it, and then you can give it back if they don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's lots of sports associations, clubs, activities that want to get kids into these things, and they try to make it accessible for everybody. So just contacting them and asking, hey, is there a swap where I can get this stuff for free? How can I get my kid interested in this? How can I lower the barriers, the cost barriers for my kid to be part of this activity? And there's a lot of associations and swaps and parent support groups that'll help you out.
If I had to come up with a way to entertain a kid for free, I would not be following any of this advice, right? I'd be like, hey, kid, here's a computer I'm not using. Fortnite doesn't cost any money. Go. And that's, I can't imagine that's going to be like good for the kid, you know, in 10 years or whatever.
My kids, when they were younger, really liked to play imagination games, which was an early lead into loving Dungeons and Dragons, as it turned out. But they were very good about making up fantasy worlds and pretending a lot. And it was because I read an essay or a poem when I was younger, and I forget who wrote it, about one of the most important things you can do for your kids is to let them be bored.
Okay.
Like, not provide any stimulation, to just be like, go outside and be bored. Because when you're bored, you have to come up with ways to be able to entertain yourself and, you know, not expecting the world to entertain you. I think that was great for my kids to be bored because it helped them develop a really rich and deep imagination.
This feels like there's like a double edge here, right? Like, what if the kids are like, hey, I found a box of Sharpies. Look at that giant canvas that is the wall.
I think it was more outside time where they were bored and I could, you know, keep an eye on them to make sure they weren't like, hey, we're bored and we're outside. Let's recreate Lord of the Flies kind of stuff. Making sure that that didn't happen, but just making sure that they have time to just, you know, not constantly have something at them holding their attention where they have to develop their own rich inner lives.
One of the most fun things I've done is build D&D campaigns. Dungeons and Dragons, right? Any of those tabletop mm-hmm. role-playing games, could be Pathfinder, it could be, what is it, Lasers and Feelings. There's a whole bunch of weird ones, right? This is crazy. I think that's a real one, and just the name is ridiculous. What was it? Thirsty Sword Lesbians? Oh, that probably not that one for the littlest of kids. But
there's
so many of these games, right? The entry cost is usually a couple of the books and some dice. Go. You need notebook paper. The kids can like write adventures and put each other through cool adventures. They get to make characters. If you're talking about a rich inner life, when you have 4 or 5 friends narrating a story and they're collaborating, right? That sounds like that's exactly what you're talking about. And even if you get all the books new, and you can get these used all the time too, right? New, like 3 or 4 of the books will be like $60. A set of dice is like $10 and go. That's, yeah. They even thought about that. Make little kids play Dungeons and Dragons. Okay.
Yeah, they are really good at pretending. So it's a good connection there.
It's really, well, you brought it up. It was your idea. I'm just, you know, saying I approve.
I think that's one of the other things that you can get for swaps. You know, community sourced, being able to play those kinds of games together. So another thing that is very expensive when you have kids is childcare. This is one of the most increasing amount of cost things, and it's near crisis levels for most families. So I wanted to go over some of the ways that families save and looking into childcare options and really thinking about, a lot of times to be able to save money on childcare, you have to apply for programs early. There's alternatives like nanny shares, co-ops, in-home daycares, which can be a little less expensive than traditional daycare centers. And when I was trying to find this, I had to work on getting word of mouth from from other parents that said, okay, yeah, this in-home place is really good for my kids, making sure that they meet the standards of what you want for your kids when they're getting childcare.
Are there dedicated places to like look for reviews, or are we just going up to Yelp and Google reviews?
I worked with a lot of other parents to do word of mouth. That was the strongest recommendation for me, but I would also read reviews. And for me, when reading reviews, I think this goes for any business, it wasn't just what people said, but how they responded.
Okay.
So if somebody posted like, you left my child outside and they got frostbite or something because you didn't take care of them. I don't know. I've never seen anything that bad. But you know, if the service provider is always like, oh, well, you are an awful parent and that's why that happened. I'm like, okay, not going there. You know, like if they're combative with people leaving reviews, but if they're like, I'm so sorry you experienced that, please give me a call so we can resolve this. Like, I think those are people. So I'm not looking for perfection. I'm just looking for a place that, you know, can handle critique and criticism and feedback. And it seems in a sane manner.
This sounds a lot like how you look for any good, reputable business. Just the stakes are way higher.
Yeah.
Right? Like when I'm buying computer parts, right, I care about like the warranty. And some companies I'll trust it, some I won't. But like, I don't know that I want warranty support on my child left out in the frostbite category weather.
It feels high stakes. And so lots of parents are reasonably really high strung about it and look into complaints. And there is a lot of regulation over childcare because of this. And that's why alternative options, you really have to look into it deeply, because the reason why it's alternative is because maybe it's not following up to the same regulations.
Like homeopathic childcare?
No. No, it's like a co-op with parents that maybe you don't really know. And some of them have different parenting philosophies than you.
What is a co-op?
So a co-op is a cooperative where people come together and form an organization to work together towards a particular thing.
I'm just used to hearing co-ops always related to grocery stores. I knew it was something about the business structure, but like I just didn't know. So thank you.
Yeah, usually it's like a worker-owned, like everybody who's part of the co-op owns part of it and is able to set up the structure of how they want it to work.
That's probably a good thing to have the caretakers invested in the structure, right? That seems good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other things that you can look at to be able to save money is an employer assistance program. So, you know, when you are thinking about starting a family, check out your employer or look for an employer that has on-site childcare or flexible spending accounts for childcare. This is an account that is pre-tax to be able to spend on childcare, and that can reduce your out-of-pocket costs. You know, taxes are about 30-35%. So that can save 30-35% if you're able to use a flexible spending account to pay for childcare. There are tax credits and deductions, like the child and dependent care tax credit, that can help you claim up to a few thousand dollars for your dependent children for childcare expenses. And then there's other things you can do that are more creative, like flexible work schedules, adjusting your schedule to minimize childcare needs. Like if you can work 4/10s, see if your employer will let you do that, or if you're working opposite shifts so that you can reduce the numbers that you need for childcare.
I hear about a lot of people working from home to take care of the kids. They still have to get their work done, but if your kids are of an age where they can get into trouble on their own, you only have to go take the Sharpies away when they find the blank canvas.
Yeah, it was pretty hard for me to work from home with my kids during the pandemic and for them to be able to go to school at home. And they were in middle school when the pandemic hit. So it was like I had three jobs, which was my job, and then making sure my kids also went to school and were following through on their things. And that was pretty hard to be able to work from home and provide child instruction and child care for my kids full time too.
Good to hear that perspective. So you wouldn't recommend it?
No, I think you need childcare, and it's not something you can do while working from home. I mean, you can have a more flexible work schedule, and remote work can do things like, you know, I'm in mountain time. And so if my employer is on the East Coast, and then that means I'm available to pick up my kids after school, while my partner could be, oh, I work for someplace that where I can work later, so I'm the one who drops them off. Like being able to adjust your work schedules that way, remote work can help make those things kind of possible. But I don't believe it's possible to remotely work and do childcare for your kids at the same time.
All right. So try to work your schedule so you completely cut out the childcare cost entirely. Or try to find an employer that will give you either some kind of flexible spending account, or we'll just have childcare on site.
Yeah.
That sounds like really
those are
good
all
advice.
good good ways. And yeah, flexible work schedule. And for me, the flexible work schedule was the most important when my kids were before they went to school, because that was when childcare was the most expensive. So when childcare was most expensive, I had my partner work during the days and I worked nights so that we really minimized the childcare need. And that's how we could afford that. And
they're like real tiny then, right? They're like, they're yeah. like, that's when you're most worried about them.
Yeah. And that's when it's the most expensive because the care is pretty intense. And when you have kids that are younger, you can't stuff as many kids per provider. So like when they're in school age, you could have like a 10 kids to one provider kind of ratio. But when they're babies, it's like 4 to 1.
See, not having kids, I would have just expected them to do it by the pound, right? Just,
no.
You know, no. Okay. That's not how it works. Okay.
I mean, I would have been overcharged because I had a hefty, hefty child. So, but
he ate all the shrimp.
Yeah. Yeah. He always.
And 75 pounds potatoes, apparently.
In a year. He might need 150. Yeah, but then also looking to support from your family community. A lot of grandparents could pitch in and give a day a week, or an auntie or somebody that's nearby, and form a babysitting thing with other parents. Schools are a great place for this, but there's a lot of different clubs that you could start up or be a part of. There's a lot of mommy parent meetup groups that you can be a part of to get to know people and decide, like, how can we, you know, pool our resources together so that childcare or babysitting isn't quite so expensive. You can also check to see if you qualify for subsidized childcare through your state, school, or employer. And nonprofits may also offer low-cost childcare options, so you could look into that. Like, there is a nonprofit in my city that gives childcare for teen moms, so that if you have a kid at age 19 or younger, you can have free childcare while you go back to school, go
That's
to work,
awesome.
And things like that. So there are nonprofits that help certain demographics with childcare and navigating childcare. And then some people do nanny sharing, so kind of like the flexible work schedule plus a flexible nanny schedule to be able, a lot of parents going in together to be able to have a childcare provider.
Nanny sharing, outside of this conversation, I would have assumed something else.
Yes, I can see where you're going with that. Anyway, so this is a way that you can save money when you're having a family. Tristan, I hope some of these were useful for you that you can be thinking about as you have your family. But if you have ways that you can save money and you're listening to this, please contact us at thoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com, and we will share your ways to save money on air.
Ooh, exciting. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Thought for Your Pennies. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, I managed to save 2 pennies, and I'm going to donate them to the survivor of the LA fires.
The one survivor's getting both your pennies. That's so generous, Squeaky. God, can't keep
up. Oh, that's right. I'll find a few more pennies and donate to the survivors at linkcuts.org/LA fires.
Yep, helping each other out whenever there are problems is a great thing we should all be doing, even if we can't make it through a simple ad read without laughing.
Welcome back to Thought for Your Pennies, and now we are thinking about scams that can target your family. I'm Shauna, and this is Squeaky.
Hey, and all I'm here to do is make jokes so crass, Shauna has to cut them.
Email us if you want Squeaky's uncut version of jokes. I'd be happy to.
Every time there isn't an intro, I said something terrible.
Well, this is a segment about scams that are targeting families. And when you're starting a family, you know, this information might be a little bit more public than you think. I don't know if you remember this story, but back in 2012, Target made the news because they sent ads to a household for pregnant women and for babies. And the father called Target and said, "Why are you sending these ads to my teenage daughter?" And find out a little later that she was pregnant and he did not know, because Target has very sophisticated algorithms to be able to predict if you're buying these certain things, if you're looking at these certain things, we know that you're about to have a baby. And they said that they have changed their marketing since then to mix in baby related things with other things so that you can just buy it on the down low. But it goes to show that if you're expecting, well, scammers are probably expecting to scam you. So what are the kinds of things that target your family besides ads? So one of the most
so many So many.
It's one of the most common ones is the family emergency scam. And this has gotten more sophisticated. I had this actually happen where I posted on social media that I was traveling abroad. Somebody called my grandmother and said, Shauna's stuck in this jail and she needs you to send money Western Union. And my grandmother said, well, she has a father that she can rely on for help, doesn't she? And hung up on the scammer.
Fantastic.
My grandmother was, bless her heart, she has passed away, a very anti-scam, very hard to scam type of person. But
not taking
it has,
any crap.
No, and it is, so it's good. Developed since then, though, because now the family emergency scam, they contact you via WhatsApp saying that your family member needs help. And scammers are now using AI to get even more sophisticated and changing their voice to sound like you as a family member. Be on the lookout for these family emergency scams that your kids are in trouble and need help. So make sure that if they call you, you call that agency back. You verify it. My grandmother's case, she called my father to tell him that I might be in trouble.
Calling them back, you don't mean just use the caller ID, right?
No.
If they say that they're like, you know, XYZ Police Department, you go Google XYZ Police Department and use their
webpage.
Find
that number.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Don't know if you remember during the pandemic when we were all getting stimulus payments in the United States, there were a lot of scams of here's your stimulus payment, the government still owes you money, lots of texting scams, mail scams about send us your social security number so that we can send you your stimulus payment kind of things.
So many scams.
And yeah, and the family side of this is that there are also scams about fake tax rebates for families. So on the FTC website, just know the government is never going to call or text you out of the blue saying, hey, give us some information so we can give you money. This is a thing that you have to contact the government to make sure that you are doing it well or talking to your financial advisor.
The scammers aren't even asking for the money up front. They're asking for information to pull some other scam later.
Yeah.
That's so
phishing
so
scams.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yep. Another one that targets families is your families want a free trip somewhere or vacation that is too cheap or too good to be true. Probably a scam.
And they'll do something to generate some false sense of urgency. Be like, claim your trip to the Bahamas. Put your deposit down for $99 to secure an all expenses paid vacation. And then you give them $99 and they disappear or whatever.
Right. Yep. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
There was kind of unique version of a scam going around in the winter of 22 for the holidays for puppies targeting families. It was a fake website that asked you for an application fee or to pay for puppy expenses, and then they totally ghosted you once you paid your deposit for a puppy.
Oh, they take adorable puppies and they're like, look, here's a picture, you could adopt this little guy. Mm-hmm. And then they just leave.
Right. Just in time for the holidays for your kids who've always wanted a puppy or whatever. Here's this purebred, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah. And then another scam that's pretty common is getting a letter from a lawyer saying a long lost relative of yours has passed away and left you an inheritance.
Okay. So I get that that's going to be a scam, but all the letters I get like that, I wind up spending the night in a haunted house. How do they get the money?
I don't know how these firms get the money, but it's probably something about you giving them some information or making a payment, like, oh, you know, to get this package, you need to send money. Something where you send money before there's actual money. That's the heart of these scams. But I wanted to talk about some of the ones that focus on families in particular.
Okay. But all these scams, they're all going to try to generate a false sense of urgency, right? And because we care about our families so much, it's so much easier to do that. I presume that's going to play a major role in this.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, the one where it's your fake family member calling you saying that they need help with AI. I think, you know, families are in a tight spot trying to save money. So trying to get tax rebates from the government, trying to be able to take family vacation on a budget. Scammers know these are the pressures you're facing with your family. So they want to try to make it easier for you. And sometimes it's just not that easy. You need to go do it the long way, I guess.
Yeah, it's important we use our emotions. But if you use your emotions for financial decisions, when a scammer is manipulating you, you're going to have a bad day.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yep. So that's family scams. So if you have other scams that you've heard of that targeted your family, please share with us a thoughtforyourpenniespod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And let's save and stay away from scams together.
And if you know how the lawyers get the money after I spent the night in the haunted house, tell me. I still don't know.
Okay, Squeaky. I'm sure somebody knows that. Thank you.
Thank you.